Welcome back to the Gathering Podcast, a ministry of First United Methodist Church in downtown Bentonville, Arkansas. In this week's podcast, we explore what is it about the Bible that gives it authority over our lives. So many say that it is an authoritative book, but so few can answer why that is. Important questions for the faith community to be asking. Let's take a listen to what Eric has to say about authority for life.
Our scripture this morning comes to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 20, verses 27 through 38. Hear this good news. Some Sadducees, those who say there is no resurrection, came to him and asked him a question. Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving a wife but no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married and died childless. Then the second and the third married her. And so in the same way, all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. In the resurrection, therefore, whose wife will the woman be? For the seven had married her. Jesus said to them, those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Indeed, they cannot die anymore because they are like angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. And the fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed in the story about the bush where he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now he is God, not of the dead, but of the living, for to him all of them are alive. This is the gift of Scripture for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Caiaphas was having a horrible morning. Nobody was respecting his authority. He just had an hour and a half knockdown, drag-out fight with his daughter because she was dating a Pharisee. He told her this was going to stop now, and she looked at him and said, sue me, and turned around and walked away. What do you do with that? She wouldn't even talk to him. So he turns around, walks into the house, goes to his favorite chair. He's going to sit down and have a cup of coffee, and the dog's in his chair. Goes to shoo the dog out, and the dog growls at him. He's not going to put up with this. He's going to move the dog. Dog bites him. My chair, he says. Well, I might as well go to the office. So he turns, walks over to the kitchen counter. Where are my car keys? Where's my cell phone? Marge, where'd you put my car keys and my cell phone? I didn't put them anywhere. Caiaphas, they're probably where you left them. I leave them every single day on the kitchen counter. It's my kitchen counter. And she said, no, it's not. It's my kitchen counter. If you don't want your keys to get moved, put them where they belong. Caiaphas just looks up and says, oh, Lord, doesn't anybody respect the high priest anymore? And he can't find his keys. He doesn't know where his phone is. So he's going to walk to work. As he's walking to work, he sees the front of the temple stairs, 100 yards long, 50 yards tall, filled with 1,000 people. And there's this guy standing at the top talking. Now, Caiaphas is really incensed because he can't even draw 150 people to listen to him speak. And here's some guy he doesn't even know with the authority to draw 1,000 people. So he skirts around the stairs, goes in the backside, goes into his office, and he calls the rest of his lawyers together and says, who is that guy? Who? The guy on the stairs. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. He came into town last night. What gives him the authority to preach on my temple stairs? You see, the people kind of think he's the Messiah. Good grief, not another wannabe Messiah, Caiaphas says. Where do they come from and why does the riffraff give them authority? Looks at his lawyers and says, okay, come on, we're going to go crush this guy. We're going to show him who has the authority in this town. And they go out through the crowds, weaving through the crowds. They come up to Jesus, and Caiaphas looks straight at Jesus and says, who gives you the authority to do these things? Who gives you the authority to teach? And Jesus, just loud enough so that all 1,000 people can hear him, says, Caiaphas, answer a question for me. Was John's baptism from God? Or was John's baptism from himself? Did the authority come from God or did it come from John? And one of the lawyers leans in and grabs Caiaphas and tugs his robe and pulls him back and says, Caiaphas, we got to be careful here. And Caiaphas leans in close and the lawyer says, if you say the authority came from God, Jesus is going to say, well, why didn't you listen to John the Baptist? And if you say the authority comes from John the Baptist, then the people are really going to be angry and they might kill us because they all think John the Baptist is a prophet. You might want to just say, we don't know. So he did. He looked at Jesus and said, I don't know. And Jesus said, well, then I won't tell you where my authority comes from either. And he turned back to the crowd and he began to tell a story about wicked landowners or wicked tenants of a landowner that tried to steal the land from the owner. And when the owner sent his own son, they killed him so they could take over the land. Caiaphas was pretty sure Jesus is talking about him. And then Jesus says, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. And anyone who trips over this stone will be crushed. And as he says it, he turns and he stares right at Caiaphas, leaving no doubt that Jesus is laying down the challenge. Caiaphas wants to challenge him right then and there, but he was afraid of the crowds. So he went back with his lawyers and they came up with a plan. We are going to discredit Jesus. We're going to embarrass him. We'll crush his authority. And the next time Jesus was preaching, the lawyers came out and they came up to Jesus and said, Jesus, who has authority to levy taxes? Should we pay our taxes to Caesar? And Jesus knows they're just trying to trick him, because if he says, yes, pay your taxes to Caesar, then they'll say, you're not a true Christian, and we'll arrest you. And if he says, don't pay your taxes to Caesar, then the Romans will arrest him. And Jesus famously says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God's. And all the lawyers said, oh, yeah, you've spoken pretty well, Jesus. And they regrouped. And then they came back with a story that Ken just read for us. A story that on the surface is about life after death and who gets to marry the woman. But it's actually a story about authority. It's purely, purely about authority. See, for the last few hundred years, the Sadducees and the Pharisees had been having very strong arguments about who had the authority to determine what Scripture was. The Sadducees said Scripture was only the first five books of the Bible. And how do we interpret that Scripture? The Sadducees says there is no life after death. There is no resurrection because there's no resurrection stated in the first five books of the Bible. The Pharisees vehemently disagree. And the Sadducees are trying to get Jesus to take one side or the other. And Jesus looks at the Sadducees and says, you don't even understand authority. You are the ones who say you have authority, but you have no idea how to even determine what Scripture is, why Scripture has authority, or how to interpret it. And then he proceeds to teach them how to interpret their own Scriptures. Your God is not the God of the dead. God is the God of the living. God is the God of all of the saints who have gone before us, living in vision, in sight of God. And the Sadducees all step back again. And they don't know what to say. And they say, other than, Jesus, you have spoken well. That is a synopsis of chapter 20 in Luke's gospel. A chapter in which Luke is teaching us about authority. I think the two questions that we have to ask ourselves regarding authority is, why does the Bible have authority? And why does Jesus have authority? Because if we can't answer those questions for ourselves, how are we going to answer those questions that people ask us? And today, today's age where half of Americans never go to church, have never gone to church, have no understanding of what the Bible is, we have to be able to answer those questions. And in an age where the other half of the people go to church an average of 12 times a year, it's important to start asking ourselves, where does Jesus' authority come and how do we see that authority? There are two general kinds of authority, and many of you will recognize these. There's the authority of the office, the assumed authority, the authority of the CEO or the president or the department head who has the authority to hire and fire and set the rules for the workplace. But then there's the authority that's given, the authority that the employees give to their boss. And if the employees don't trust their boss implicitly, and if they don't grant their boss authority to lead them, that department's going to crash or that company's going to go out of business. In a church, Kurt and I have authority because we're pastors. We have authority to lead and guide and mold the church. But if the congregation doesn't trust us, this church ain't going anywhere. The authority of Scripture comes from trying it and discovering it to be true. The authority of Scripture comes from meeting God in the pages of Scripture, living the life that God asks us to live, and discovering that God is there in the midst of that. The authority of Jesus comes purely from following the way of Jesus and realizing that even though this way is very hard, Jesus is there in the midst of life. And that by following the way of Jesus, we do come to experience God's presence with us. And as Diana Butler Bass mentioned, the way that we can find that authority in times when we don't know where to begin is with the lives of the saints. The Eastern Orthodox Church actually says there are two canons of Scripture. The first, the Bible. The second, the lives of the saints that have gone before us. And they require all of their congregations and their clergy members to study both. If we want to know what it is like to live in faith, we read the autobiographies and the biographies of those who have actually dedicated their lives to Christ. On our website, if you go to the fumcbentonville.org, you will see an option to click on Get Involved. If you click on Get Involved, you'll see My Christian Path. If you click on My Christian Path, you'll see a 4-year curriculum that I've created for our congregation, listing the books that I suggest you would read in order in a 4-year series. Many of those books are the lives of the saints, people that I have found to be very helpful in my Christian walk. One of those people is the mom of John and Charles Wesley, Susanna Wesley. Susanna had an incredibly difficult life, but she kept detailed notes. She kept journals, so we have a lot of information about that life. And she talks about how often she experienced God's presence powerfully in her day. And the only reason she made it through some days was because of the presence of God in her life. She married Samuel Wesley. He was a priest in the Church of England. Not a very successful priest. He had visions, dreams of grandeur. He wanted to be the next great Christian author. And he invested everything that he had in his commentary on the book of Job. And he kept running out of money, and he ended up in debtor's prison twice. And when he wasn't in debtor's prison, he was back at home. And we know he was back at home because Susanna had 19 children. 19 children, 9 of whom died before they reached the age of 5. Susanna did not have an easy life. And as she's taking care of her children, trying to deal with life when her husband's in debtor prison, when he come back from debtor's prison, they wouldn't get along, and he'd leave. He'd punish her by going back to London and withholding funds so she'd have to figure out a way to lead the family. And lead the family she did. And on the 5th birthday, every child was required to learn their alphabet. And the next day, they started a 6-hour curriculum. All of her children went to homeschool every day, 6 hours, except for Sunday. In addition to that, when Samuel was home preaching, the congregation absolutely despised him. They despised him so much that they told him, we don't want you as our pastor. You need to leave. And he refused. So they burned down the parsonage. Twice. And he still didn't quit. He just left and sent others to fill in his pulpit spot. And the people that he could afford weren't any better than him. So nobody came to church. And Susanna couldn't stand the fact that nobody was coming to church. So she started writing her own Bible studies. And people came to the Bible studies. Then she started writing her own homilies, which turned into her own sermons. And pretty soon she was doing her own worship services in the parsonage. And 20 people would come to worship in church on Sunday morning. And 300 people would come to worship with Susanna in the evenings. Not only was Susanna the mother of her children, she was the spiritual mother for her entire community. And through all of this, she writes that Christ was powerfully present. And she passed that on to her children. John and Charles became the leaders they are because of the model they had of their mother. Every historian that I've read, Methodist historian, that talks about Susanna Wesley says there wouldn't be a people called Methodists if there wasn't a Susanna Wesley. If we need inspiration, if we want to know how to live this Christian life, we have 2,000 years of people who have done it, the stories of people who have done it and found Christ powerfully present. The saints who have gone before us are our models. Jesus shows us the face of God, and those who have followed Jesus show us how to follow Jesus. I'd like to offer a prayer for you, a prayer written by Sarah Groves about the saints. Please pray with me. Lord, I have a heavy burden of all I've seen and know. It's more than I can handle, but your word is burning like a fire shut up in my bones, and I can't let go. And when I'm weary and overwrought with so many battles left unfought, I think of Paul and Silas in the prison yard. I hear their song of freedom rising to the stars. I see the long, quiet walk along the Underground Railroad. I see the slave awakening to the value of her soul. I see the young missionary and the angry spear. I see his family returning with no trace of fear. I see the long, hard shadows of Calcutta nights. I see Mother Teresa standing there by the dying man's side. I see the young girl huddled on the brothel floor. I see the man of salvation come kicking down that door. I see the man of sorrows and his long, troubled road. I see the world on his shoulders and my easy load. And when those saints go marching in, I want to be one of them.
Thanks once again for joining us on the Gathering Podcast. If you're in the Northwest Arkansas area, come and join us for worship at First United Methodist Church in downtown Bentonville. We have services at 8:30, 8:45, 9:45, and 11 each Sunday morning. We'd love to see you here. Grace and peace, y'all.